Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Very nice to have you here. Even better to be here myself. Welcome to the program. We are live in Southern California. Lots of different places to go. You know, I really did want to start by talking about the LA Lakers and LeBron and what they did last night and the fact that people are coming for LeBron. And I don't mean just Twitter eggs. You know, I mean people who matter have been saying things about LeBron this week. And then LeBron responded. LeBron said that response last night had nothing to do with anything that anybody said. But I want to get to that in a few moments. What I do want to start with today, though, is some NFL. And I love the matchup in the NFC East. And I love what the Cowboys are doing right now. Rod Marinelli's Dallas Cowboys. Rod Marinelli's Cowboys have turned their entire season around. It was only 1 week ago today that Rodney's crew went into New Orleans and punched the best team in the NFL in the mouth repeatedly. DeMarcus Lawrence, Jalen Smith, Leighton Vander Esch. They all made the Saints offense look like the Bills offense. And I bring this up, one, because that bears repeating. Rod Marinelli has turned the Cowboys season around. Number two, now it is Eagles week. And for the Cowboys, Philadelphia could not be coming to Arlington at a better time. The Cowboys have won four in a row. Rod Marinelli's D is lighting suckers up on a weekly basis. Dallas is in first place in the East. A win on Sunday would go a long way towards wrapping up that division. I mean, they look like they were DOA a few weeks back. A win this weekend would go a long way towards actually wrapping that thing up, especially given the way they close out the year with the Colts, the Bucks, and the Giants. So right now, there's a ton of momentum behind the Cowboys, and they are your definite favorite on Sunday. However, not everybody is buying in to the Cowboys or that resurgence. And by not everybody, I mean one guy in particular. Eagles linebacker, Kamu Grugier-Hill. Roll it.
I mean, look at Dallas' history. They always choke, so we'll go down there and make them choke.
Uh-oh! That sounded like 1 second, but that was really actually 7 seconds, and there is a lot of smack right there. It's pretty remarkable. Let me play that again. Roll it back, please.
I mean, look at Dallas' history. They always choke, so we'll go down there and make them choke.
Look at Dallas's history. They always choke. So we'll go down there and make them choke. That's pretty nice. That's the kind of thing you don't see very often. A guy on a team that's won two straight, going on the road against a division rival that's rolling and calling them chokers. Especially a choker blast, since choking or accusing somebody of choking is right up there with calling somebody a quitter in terms of the worst thing that you could possibly say about an athlete or a team. Well, you guys think you're good. You think you're good. Yeah, that's cool. But you know what you really are? Chokers. You're a bunch of chokers. You always choke. And we're going to come in there and make you choke again. Nicely done. KGH. Of course, that nearly broke Twitter with fools running around to fire up the bulletin board material alarm and demanding that KGH apologize immediately. Better yet, saying that guy should have never said that in the first place. To which I respond, child, please.
Child, please.
I mean, first off, nobody's got a bulletin board anymore. There's no such thing as a bulletin board. When was the last time you saw an NFL locker room that had a physical bulletin board? You're probably right around the time paper boys stopped standing on the street corners yelling, extra, extra, read all about it. Secondly, aside from the fact that there are no bulletin boards anymore, what there is grown-ass men playing other grown-ass men in a violent sport for the ultimate prize. Do you really think the Cowboys were going to ignore the Eagles this weekend and didn't actually start thinking about the Eagles, didn't have their attention until KGH said that? Doubt it. I'm pretty sure the Cowboys knew that the Eagles were the opponent. I'm pretty sure the Cowboys had been studying up on them all week long. So no, I don't have a problem with what KGH said. Not only do I not have a problem, I love it. And I wonder what took so long. Why did it take this long into Eagles-Cowboy week before the trash talk started? For a moment, I thought everybody was slacking, that nobody gave a damn. But then KGH got it all started, and he should. It's Eagles Cowboys week, Philly v. Dallas, the rivalry that gave us Bounty Bowl 1, Bounty Bowl 2. Seriously, a rival and a rivalry that allegedly had a coach putting a bounty on the head of an opposing team's quarterback and a kicker. That kind of rivalry. And nothing was being said. The same rivalry where we saw Michael Irvin flat out on the turf at Veterans Stadium with a serious neck and spine injury. There is a question as to whether or not that guy would ever walk again for a moment, at least in that moment. And yet Philly fan was allegedly booing as he was placed on a stretcher. Not only that, they allegedly chanted "Deion sucks" when Deion Sanders went to console his fallen teammate. This is what that rivalry has always been. And we're going to get worked up about a 7-second quote. Here's the other thing. What this guy says, in large part, is true. Philly has won 6 of the last 8 in Jarrah's house. They kind of do own the Cowboys in Dallas. They routinely go into Dallas and they win. Essentially, it is their home away from home. So why shouldn't this guy be pumped up before that game? Why shouldn't this guy point out what's pretty much evident already? And if your beef with KGH is that he's not a household name, yeah, I'm not going to hear that either. He's one of their captains. He's a leader on that team. So just because you don't put any weight into his words or you want to drop some witty Twitter zinger on him because you've never heard of him, trust me, his teammates know who he is and they know what he's talking about. And yes, he's well aware that he dropped a potential pick 6 in their first meeting this season. So you're not really going to get him to back down by just bringing that up. So, no, that's not bulletin board material. That's actually awesome material. And a good game just got even better because of it. So, KGH, thanks, my man. Nice job. Good looking out. Way to get our attention, even though they already had your attention. I like it. Philly-Dallas week just got a little bit better. 1-800-636-8686. Another topic today, as long as we're in the NFC East. Hey, can I say this just off the top? Did you leave Mark Sanchez alone? Why is everybody coming for this guy again, all over again? You're lucky he even performs for you bastards. Leave Mark Sanchez alone!
Performed for you bastards!
Leave Sanchez alone! It's not just eggs either. Now it's Plexico Burris. Plexico Burris wants to get his popcorn ready. Come on, Plex, really? Man, get off this guy already. I've got a take on that a little bit later on. Hey, Rome. Actually, this email starts with Snaglio Ordonez. KD says that playing in an environment with LeBron is, quote, toxic. How rich. Right, KD? Because you going for a triple double on burner accounts every night between Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat isn't toxic or distracting at all. Son, Mike in Buffalo, helping him. Wore Lake Effect Snow. Wore Phil Housley. Unwore the Maple Leafs. Got to be like that, don't you, Mike? Mike Babcock was on yesterday. How can you unwore the Maple Leafs? I've got your guy on today. What the hell more do you want from me? Dear Romy, riveting matchup between the Jags and Titans. Can't wait to watch these two powerhouses beat each other into the ground. Regards, paint drying, root canals, and John in Detroit's phone calls.
Pump fists spinning their cubicles.
You mean Josh? Bro, you typed John. You didn't even get his name right. Signed John and Wisco. War LeBron basically saying that he doesn't give a damn and then going out and dominating in the fourth quarter. Exactly. I think part of that's true and part of that's not. I think he probably gives a little more of a damn than he's letting on, but not that much. And he did dominate. And they are a game out of fourth. They're a game back of Golden State. One more email. Dear Jim, wow. We really need a quarterback. Wait. Reuben Foster is available? Beat his girlfriend. Promoting violence. Bring him in. Still could use a quarterback, though. Wait. Kaepernick kneeled for the national anthem, protesting violence. No bleeping way we sign him. Signed Dan Snyder, Brad in Hillsdale. You know what, Brad? I will allow that. I will allow that. You know why I will allow that? Because you're right. Say what you want about Kaepernick. Say what you want about his stance. What that guy just emailed me is exactly right. Reuben Foster's available. Yeah, we'll bring him in. In fact, right away. We need a quarterback. Colin Kaepernick's available. Oh, hell no. Hell no. That guy took a knee during the national anthem. Yeah, but Foster allegedly abused his girlfriend. Yeah, and what's your point? Oh, okay, Dan. We are joined right now by the head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies. He signed a 3-year contract with the Grizz in the offseason. Memphis is in first place in the Southwest Division. They're at New Orleans tomorrow night. That is an 8 p.m. Eastern start. We are joined by the coach, J.B. Bickerstaff. J.B., it's so good to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm good. Appreciate you having me.
Great to have you. Thanks so much. Let me start with last night. You beat the Clippers 96-86, and then after that game you said, quote, we're in this for the long haul. Over the course of the first quarter of the season, let me start right there. What have you seen about this group that lets you know that they are in it for the long haul?
I think just the commitment to one another and the commitment to, you know, what we're trying to get done. You know, not playing the typical style of NBA basketball that's going on right now. You know, hanging our hat on the defensive end, understanding that, you know, from a coach's perspective, we understand how hard that is, you know, every single night to do things that are difficult over and over and over again. And our guys have never flinched. You know, they've bought in from the beginning, and every challenge we get them, they take it head on.
You know, back to your point about not playing the typical NBA style. For instance, when people think of the Grizzlies, the first thing that generally comes to mind is grit and grind. But to your point, it's an era where the game is being played faster and faster, but you've got no problem slowing it down. So what does grit and grind mean to you?
Well, it's a mindset more than anything. You know, we like guys who, you know, don't mind taking one-on-one challenges. If there's a ball on the floor, they're willing to dive for it and go and get it. Excuse me, you know, set screens, all the hard things and difficult things that the game presents. We're looking for guys that accept those and want to go for those things. You know, the pace of the game, we like to say we want to bring people to the mud and see how many people like to play in the mud where our guys are comfortable. And, you know, it's a unique situation because, you know, as all the other 29 teams prepare and play against one another, you know, they're used to playing up pace, fast tempo. And then when we, you know, when they play us, we like to slow them down. And it makes some people uncomfortable.
Grizzlies head coach J.B. Bickerstaff is my guest. I love that phrase. We want to bring people to the mud and see how comfortable they are, because you guys are comfortable in the mud. What happens when you bring other teams into the mud and you start to pound them? Generally, what is their reaction and are they comfortable?
Well, you know, obviously there's some teams that are capable of playing, you know, both styles of basketball. You know, talent is what talent is. But, you know, overall, you see people start to get a little more anxious, you know, because they're used to getting so many field goal attempts up or so many three-point shots up that we end up seeing them get rushed and take bad shots. Or they turn the basketball over because they are so anxious. And then, you know, on the defensive end, because they want to get back on offense, you know, and that's where their thought is, they're making mistakes on the defensive end, and it helps us create opportunities for our guys.
We're talking to J.B. Bickerstaff. Last night also was Joakim Noah's debut for you. So what does he bring to the team, and what did you make of what you saw from him last night?
He brings, you know, a tenacity. He's a ferocious defender and competitor. He's extremely intelligent, which, you know, helps us with what we're trying to do on both sides of the ball. And, you know, for his first game, I thought he was really good. You know, obviously he's got to work his way into, you know, NBA shape where he could play a 7-8 minute run. But, you know, in the minutes that he played, he was extremely effective. You know, he brings an energy that the crowd and our guys can feed off of, a willingness to push guys and conversate. So we're excited about it.
JB Bickerstaff joining us here in the jungle. You know, let me ask you about Mike Conley. This is a guy that I really respect a great deal, but I feel like he doesn't necessarily get the love that he deserves and that he's earned nationally. So what does he mean to your team, not just from a production standpoint, but also from a leadership standpoint?
He's the orchestrator. And, you know, I agree with you as far as, you know, the respect. It blows my mind being around him every day that, you know, he's never made an all-star team. His talent level, is up there with the elite level guards that we have in our game today. But he puts everybody in their place. He orchestrates, he organizes on both sides. You know, he's really good defensively at getting the ball funneled where we want it to go. And then, in the fourth quarter, you know, the reason they call him Captain Clutch is because he's going to take the big shot. And most times he's going to make it. So we're highly dependent on him. And, you know, for people nationally who don't get a chance to watch us play a ton, I think it's worth taking the time to check us out and keep your eye on Mike Conley and see just how good he really is.
I mean, that's so true. The fact that he's never made an all-star team is hard to fathom for me. Then you've got Marc Gasol, who was the defensive player of the year back in 2013, but he's getting a lot of run to win it again this season. How important is he to your identity on the defensive end?
Well, I mean, he's the anchor, and I think that's where it starts for us. Having a guy who can, you know, single-handedly shut down the paint is huge for what we're trying to do. Having a guy who's so intelligent that he can communicate actions to his teammates before they happen and anticipate those actions happening, makes everybody's job easier and allows all of us to be in spots earlier, which helps us defensively because now we're not guessing and jumping opening opportunities because we can anticipate and beat guys to spot. So, he's having to change a little bit because the game is so perimeter-oriented. But he still has the ability to get out on the perimeter. You know, last night we switched him on to smaller guys, and he could keep them in front of them and force them to take tough shots. So he's invaluable for what he does for us.
We're talking Memphis Grizzlies basketball head coach JB Bickerstaff joining us. You know, then you pair Gasol with rookie Jaren Jackson Jr., and to me it's an amazing combo. You knew you had something special in Jackson when you drafted him, but did you know he'd be this good this fast?
To be honest with you, I thought he'd be, you know, more of an impact defensively than he has been, you know, than offensively. But to our surprise and our pleasure, his offensive skill set at this age, is perfectly suited for the NBA game, but it's high level. His ability to, you know, run the floor and post early and finish with either hand with soft touch, you know, the ability to use the glass, and then his ability to stretch out and make threes. For a guy who's 6'11 with a 7'5 wingspan and huge hands, you know, a lot of times controlling the ball from the free throw line or the three-point line is difficult, but he's got such smooth touch and such plays with such grace, you know, put the ball on the floor, face up guys and drive them and finish. So we've been pleasantly surprised, and we definitely feel like we have a gem there.
We're talking to JB Bickerstaff for a few more moments. And of course, your father had an outstanding NBA career. He had more than 400 career wins as an NBA coach. And I know one of the things that he taught you that he felt really strongly about is you got to shoot your players straight. You've got to be honest with your players. How did he go about maybe teaching you that, and why was that so important to him?
It was a matter of respect. One of the things that I learned from him is, you know, players are people too, and they deserve our respect. A lot of times we get caught up and see them as pieces on a chessboard, and we're moving this guy to trade here, we're drafting, you know, and those types of things. But, you know, they're people. And the more honest you are with them, even in the moment, if they don't accept it, down the line, I've seen a bunch of guys come back to my dad and tell him how much they appreciated him being honest. And, you know, that's just the way he was with us. My mom was a school teacher, you know what I mean? So she had to have hard conversations with kids all the time. And it was just the way we were brought up is just, you know, if you want to earn people's respect, you just be honest with them, you know, no games, no mind games. And then, you know, people are more likely to give you all they got if they believe they can trust you.
So let me finally ask you this. You were on the Woj pod recently, and you talked about the fact that you were an interim coach with Memphis last season. You'd already been through that as an interim with Houston, and then last year you took the approach that the priority had to be the organization and the organization's needs, that it was not the place for you to think about yourself. So at that time, I mean, you got to think, there's only a certain number of head coaching opportunities in the NBA, so how are you able to approach it where you weren't constantly thinking about what you had to do to keep that job?
I mean, it was tough. You know, we went through some very, very difficult times. But, you know, it's, again, I give the credit to my parents and the way we were brought up. And, you know, as a teacher and as a coach, you have to be selfless. And you can't think about yourself. And I watched my parents do that, you know, over and over again. So, you know, when I worked with my dad in Charlotte for those three years, I just watched him. You know, we were an expansion team. You know, we brought in new guys. We were just building, trying to set a foundation. And instead of him going out and trying to make a quick fix, you know, he did what was right by the organization. He took some losses on his career record for it, but it was the right thing to do. So, you know, it was the right thing for the organization, you know, to go through what we had to go through, to end up with a guy like Jaren Jackson. And you just hope that, in the long run, people look back and, you know, have some respect for what you've done, and ended up working out here for me in Memphis.
So, JB, one quick follow. In talking about the family business, as an example, I worked in the family business. My old man fired me. Nothing personal. I was not good at the job. I talked to Bobby Hurley for my podcast yesterday, and we talked about what it was like for him to coach under his brother Dan. I talked to Eric Musselman recently, and we talked about what it was like for him to work for his dad. What was it like for you to work for your father?
It was tough, to say the least. The standard that he held me to was a tough one, but he wanted me to be the best that I could possibly be. But, you know, it's when you go to work and you're at practice, and sometimes, you know, you get embarrassed because, you know, dad is still dad, and he gets on you like, you know, like your dad does in the privacy of your own home. But now you got 15 players and other assistant coaches who are watching you get, you know, get set straight. But, you know, it pushed me to get better, and we had a lot of fun together.
All right, so quickly, getting into my next topic. This email says, "Dear media fanboys, please stop being such LeBron groupies, hanging on to his every word. Just get out of the way and let us play basketball. Also, I am available for comment if you're interested in writing another fawning puff piece about my investment portfolio, or how I'm building a business empire, or how I'm mentored by Silicon Valley stooges, or how I'm interested in owning a Seattle NBA franchise. Regards, Kevin Durant." So I know exactly what he's talking about. He's talking about Kevin Durant saying what he said about LeBron and how it's not easy to play with LeBron because of the media fanboys that are fawning on him all the time. In fact, why don't we start right there? For the past week or so, there have been a lot of people who have had their thoughts on LeBron and how LeBron should play. And they're not just knuckleheads and Twitter warriors. I'm talking guys like Magic, Kobe, and KD. Magic told SiriusXM that he was concerned about LeBron's minutes. Quote, "Now it is Cleveland all over again, and we don't want that. We got a lot of ball handlers, so we feel we won't overuse him in terms of his ball handling, and also every play has to run through him." End quote. That's Magic. Again, not some Twitter warrior. Magic. Kobe told The Athletic, quote, "At the beginning of the season, you saw a collection of individual talent trying to figure out what they can do and where they can do it on the floor. What about their games? But at the same time, how to figure out how to make those games blend in as a group. You can't have one before the other. See what I'm saying? So it's a test of Bron's patience and also doing what he needs to do to keep the team's head above water. So it's a balancing act." End quote. Then you've got KD. KD, for his part, had a number of pretty interesting quotes for Bleacher Report, including suggesting that it would be hard to find other stars who want to play with LeBron, in part because, quote, "So much hype comes from being around LeBron from other people. He has so many fanboys in the media. Even the beat writers just fawn over him. I'm like, we're playing basketball here. It's not even about basketball at certain points. So I get why anyone wouldn't want to be in that environment, because it's toxic, especially when the attention is bull bleep attention. Fluff. It's not LeBron's fault at all. It's just the fact that you've got so many groupies in the media that love to hang on to every word. Just get out of the way and let us play basketball. End quote. So you've got all this going on this week. LeBron's taking it all in. So what's his response? His response to it all came last night. 42 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals in a win over the Spurs, and 20 in the fourth quarter to erase an 8-point deficit in the final 9 minutes of the game. And that included a run of 14 straight in the fourth as he dragged the Lakers back from the brink for another win. This guy had it all working. Had it all working last night. He was driving the lane.
LeBron around a pick from JaVale McGee. LeBron down the middle. 360 spin to the win. In. LeBron lays it up and in.
My man, John Ireland, the legend. Lakers radio. Then you had LeBron leading the break.
Alonzo outlet LeBron. Here comes LeBron 1-on-3. LeBron down the middle all the way. Left hand layup. Good enough foul.
And then you had a three from damn near Century City.
LeBron 1-on-1 with Dante Cunningham. 35-footer. Good! I mean, way outside. Steph Curry deep, and LeBron's talking to the crowd.
That's a ridiculous three. That was a ridiculous three. That was a ridiculous run, and that capped off a 4-0 homestand for the Lakers. I mean, sure, there was a Lonzo three. There was a Lonzo dunk last night, but that was all LeBron. That was all LeBron. When he was asked afterwards if the performance was a response to everybody's opinions about how he should play and who he should play with, he shook the entire thing off.
Nah, for what? I'm past the personal stage. Yeah, I'm. I can do whatever. I can have a huge workload. I can have a not so huge workload. It doesn't matter for me. But what's most important is, you know, seeing my teammates make huge shots in the fourth quarter. Jay Hart out of rhythm all game because of foul trouble. He makes 2 huge threes in the fourth quarter. Zoe makes a huge three on the left wing. You know, Kuz making the plays down the stretch as well. That's what's most important to me. I can care less about the narrative about me. That doesn't matter. I'm stapled in this game.
He is a staple in this game. But what about another staple in this game? KD. What about KD's thoughts? When asked about his thoughts about Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant saying that guys do not want to play with him because it's toxic, he had this to say.
I would love to see the whole transcript of what was asked of him, the context it was asked of him, why it was asked, and the whole thing. So I'm not going to comment on it because I'm not knowledge. I don't know the whole thing. That would be stupid on my part. I'm a veteran.
That's a pro response right there. That is the ultimate pro response. It would be stupid on his part, and he is a veteran. He's smart. Hey, look, I'm never going to tell Magic and Kobe and KD what to think. These guys have forgotten more about the game than I would ever know in 100 years. So let me direct this at everybody who's tagged along onto their takes. Man, just stop. LeBron is going to do his thing, and right now LeBron's thing is working, right? They're a game back of Golden State. A game back of Golden State. They're 2 games out of first in the West. Not bad for a team that some dopes thought might not even make the playoffs. Now, it doesn't mean they're a lock, but they've been doing all of this without Rajon Rondo. They're doing all of this while they're trying to figure out how to play around and gel with LeBron. They're doing it while they're finding their identity. And right now, their identity is LeBron. And right now, LeBron is working. As Greg Popovich said, when asked about him, this is what makes this guy, even at this point in his career, so difficult to defend.
Have you watched LeBron play before?
I mean, was there just a...
Jesus. He's LeBron James. That's what makes him difficult to guard. Anybody else?
Get right? You can argue with that. What makes the guy so difficult? Did you really just ask me that? What makes it so difficult to defend LeBron James? He's LeBron James. Now, and this is not me fawning over LeBron James. You know, there have been points in this guy's career where I've been really critical, and there have been points of his career where I've been extremely positive. Right now, I'm extremely positive. Josh Hart actually said it best. Josh Hart, when asked about LeBron and all the attention that comes along with LeBron, he said it best, actually.
When it's happening, you know, sometimes it's amazing. And people should really stop criticizing, shut up, and, you know, witness greatness while he's still doing it.
That's it. People should stop criticizing, shut up, witness the greatness while he's doing it, enjoy it, because you may not see it again. You may not see it again. There's a great piece in the Players Tribune that Allen Iverson dropped this morning. It is awesome. And he weighed in on the GOAT. I may get to that a little bit later on. AI wanted to weigh in on LeBron v. Kobe v. Mike. And he had a great line. He was talking about the so-called, quote, and this is AI, quote, Black Jesus. Who do you think that he glossed the Black Jesus? LeBron, Kobe, or Mike? Hey, Rome, LeBron is the freaking GOAT. Wait until that two-horned beast asks you to do Space Jam 2. Aaron in Omaha. Wore LeBron being able to self-gloss as the GOAT and no one questioning it. AI may have. You're right. I mean, maybe I should reserve further judgment until I get that phone call from LeBron for Space Jam 2. It's actually a pretty good point. You know me, I don't play favorites. I'm totally objective. In terms of who do I think is the GOAT, it depends whether or not I get a call for Space Jam 2. Mike already called me for it, for Space Jam 1, right?
Allegedly.
I'll never forget that phone call. Phone rings one day, I'm like, I don't know that number. Hello? Is this Jim Rome? Yeah, who's this? Michael Jordan. Oh, hey, Mike. Yeah, hey, Rome, you and I got to talk about Space Jam. Are you in? Sure, I'm in. Mike, are you? Of course I'm in. All right, well, thanks for being in my movie, Mike. And that was the end of that phone call. I'm hoping to get a similar call. I'm hoping to make a similar call to LeBron. Hey, LeBron. Yeah, who's this? It's Jim Rome. Oh, what's up, Vance Mack? Hey, LeBron, you want to be in my movie, Space Jam 2? Yeah, I think I would like to do that, Jim. All right. We'll talk about it. Let's get lunch. Stay strong, player. Click. No, I haven't gotten that call yet. It's coming, though. I know it is. Dear Rome, Durant is setting this up perfectly, saying it's hard to join LeBron because of the toxicology. But then this summer, he'll join LeBron because he's brave to face and deal with that. I approve Durant very much. John in Huntington Beach, Ward Janet, sending me a Christmas card. Hey, John, Kevin Durant, and we're not sure where he's going to end up. I mean, that's the big topic. Is he going to stay in Golden State or is he going to bounce? And if he's going to bounce, where is he going to bounce to? I could certainly make an argument that bouncing to L.A., despite what he said, would be pretty good for him. Imagine if KD were to get another ring, but to do it in L.A., and to do it over Golden State. But KD's point is, it's really hard to be a star and play alongside LeBron because of the fawning media and all the bullcrap attention. LeBron said, you know, and I'm not going to talk about that. I need to see the entire statement in its context, but no, you're not going to hook me. That was a pro response. I know this, John. You're not getting the Christmas card from Janet. Pretty much everybody will except you. And Hitman Canadian tweets, like LeBron, I strive for greatness. Rack me, Josh in Detroit.
And I said, I'll take it. Rack me, Jim.
At Brendan Webb tweets, I'm way past the personal stage. Yours, left eye, burning Andre Rison's house to the ground. War Ep 62. That was way past the personal stage. Personal is, you know, dropping somebody's clothes out the window. Way past personal is burning the entire house to the ground.
Burning.
I mean, seriously, personal is not returning certain gifts or jewelry that were given to you. Way past personal is going to their house and burning it to the ground.
Burning.
Remember when Andre Rison was waiting for a call from the NFL Hall of Fame and it didn't come? So he put himself in his own Hall of Fame? That was a strong move. Stronger than his ex burning his house to the ground. That's way past personal. You're right. We're joined right now by the head coach of the Buffalo Sabres. He is a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame. He retired with the most points and games played by an American-born player in NHL history. The head coach of the gold medal-winning U.S. team at the 2013 World Junior Championships. Buffalo right now is third in the Atlantic. They're at home against Philadelphia on Saturday. We are joined by their head coach, Phil Housley. Phil, really nice to have you on. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks, Jim. Glad to be on.
It's great to have you on, Phil. So let me ask you about the first quarter of the season. You tied the team's best win streak with 10 straight earlier, but you dropped a couple of few tough ones since then, each by one goal. In the past, Phil, it seems like it might have been easy for guys maybe to get down and feel like, here we go again. But from the outside, it doesn't seem like that at all. So how would you describe where your team is at right now, a quarter of the way through the season?
Well, I think, you look at our team, and I think it started back in training camp. Obviously, we had to make some changes to our personnel and our culture, and our leadership group has done a terrific job of buying in and leading by example. And just from training camp, we moved throughout the season, really had a good vibe within our group. They were very tight, and they're playing for each other. Obviously, we've gotten off to a pretty good start here in the first 29 games. We had the 10-game win streak, which was a really, great for our community of Western New York to get the hope back and excitement back in within our city. Obviously, we've dropped the last four against some really good competition. You know, you look at Tampa, Florida, who's been playing really well of late, and then going into Nashville and then Toronto a couple nights ago, where I thought we really played a good game. You know, going into those buildings, it's tough. I liked our game. We weren't getting the results, but if we continue to play like we did against Toronto, we're going to turn this thing around. But I'm really pleased of where we're at right now. Obviously, the 29-game point mark for us.
Phil Housley, joining us on the program. You know, Phil, you mentioned the community. The team has been through a number of really challenging seasons, but right now you're in third in the Atlantic. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a city of fans more loyal than Buffalo. So what's it been like for you to come back to the city where you were drafted and where you spent the first 8 years of your career and have the kind of success you're having right now?
Well, it's been awesome. It's ironic that, I started my career as a player and I get my first head coaching job in Buffalo. So it's always been a city in my heart where, management took a chance on a young 18-year-old to come in and made the team, and then now giving me an opportunity as a head coach. And, obviously last year was a very difficult year for a lot of reasons, not only on the players, the coaches, but more specifically our fans, especially at home. Was very tough, and we really focused this year, of really concentrating not only to get off to a good start, but really playing well at home. And our home records have been very solid up to this point. But in saying that, our fans have done a terrific job of supporting us, even through the tough times. You look at the last 5 years, and I was involved last year. It was very tough, but they continue to support us. You can see the excitement now. The building's packed. It's rocking, and I think the guys have done a terrific job feeding off their energy.
Sabres head coach Phil Housley is joining us. You know, Phil, every time I talk to an NHL coach these days, the topic of young elite players comes up, and you've got a truly special one in Jack Eichel. He had a couple of goals against Toronto on Tuesday. What makes him so good and so unique?
Well, I think number one is speed and power. When he's using his speed, he's very tough to defend. But the thing that I'm really intrigued about his game this year is just his 200-foot game, whether it's in our defensive zone or is he using his speed attacking through a neutral zone. He's really aware defensively. He's making the right reads. He's heavy in the battle down low, and he's using his speed to get on the attack. I really like that he's playing hard at both ends. And when he's on his game, there's not many players that are better than him when he's on. And he's been huge contributor, not scoring goals, but offensively doing the things what it takes to win. And he's really, taken on a really prominent role as our captain and has really taken ownership in that and leading by example. And if you look at our team, we've got a lot of young, really young talent group here with Mittelstadt, Thompson, and our first pick overall, Rasmus Dahlin. just to name a few, and you know, the future looks bright for us.
I mean, Phil, that's an amazing thing. I really, really think that is such a big ask. I think those who know the sport understand that if you get that C on your sweater, regardless of who it is, what city it is, how old you are, that's an enormous thing. That's a really, really rare thing in any sport. The fact that he's your captain at age 21 really blows my mind. I mean, I would never, like, compare any young guy to Stevie Yzerman, but that's like some Stevie Yzerman stuff right there. What's it say about the respect that he's already earned at such a young age?
Well, I think, you know, we had to ask a lot of tough questions after last year, and that goes with our leadership group. And when we named Jack captain, he's really taken it to another level. He's really, you know, matured right now beyond his years. And I think the biggest thing for me when we talk about Jack is just leading by example. He's been done a terrific job, whether it's in practice, setting the tempo, in the games, you know, getting off to a good start. He's a big reason why we're where we are at right now, just by his leadership and leading by example.
We're talking to Phil Housley, Buffalo Sabres head coach. You know, Phil, another thing that keeps coming up to the players, or when players and people around the league talk about you, they talk about your ability to communicate and lead. As an example, Eddie Olczyk, one of my favorites, was a teammate of yours. He points out that as a player, you were on a different level from everybody else, and a lot of players who are as skilled as you sometimes have a hard time relating to players who don't have that same talent or skill. So how have you been able to connect with and lead your players as well as you have?
Well, I think, you know, I go back to our leadership group. It starts with them. You know, the communication and the relationship that we've formed even before training camp was really tight. And there's a trust factor in that, you know, when we hold guys accountable, it's for the right reasons. But I think you have to create, you know, really good relationships with your players. You know, we understand that there's different type of players in different roles. You know, there's players that that are skilled and they want to make plays, and they have to have a field of where they can try to make plays, because we don't want to take away their creativity. This is an instinctive game. We've got to let them use their instincts to, you know, be creative. But at the same time, we've held them accountable in their play and their effort. You know, those are the two things they can control. If they come out with a complete effort, there's really not much we can ask. And for the most part, we've had, you know, 23 guys to 25 guys on the roster that we've plugged in at different times, and they've really, you know, have played for each other. They don't want to let their teammate down, which is, it's great on their part. And I give a lot of credit to the players, because there's one doing the work. And if we can continue to build the culture and relationships with the players, you're going to get that effort game in and game out.
All right, so quickly, there are some things in life that simply do not mix, right? Oil and water, David Arquette, and amateur deathmatch wrestling. And, of course, James Dolan and music.
Wash away my pain with the rain in Shambhala. Wash away my sorrow. Wash away my shame with the rain in Shambhala.
Man, those two things do not mix at all. I mean, you forget just how horrible that guy is at music. That is so bad. You either are the epitome of obliviousness, or you just don't give a damn. Or you really think you have game. How do you show up on any stage, however large or small, and do that? And I get that you're a rich guy and all, but who put you on that stage? I mean, my man's got to own that stage, because there's no way anybody puts him on that stage sounding like that. Maybe that's why Oak wanted to go. That's a reason to go. That guy getting up on stage and making that noise, that's a reason to go. Add that to the list of reasons to go. My man, Oak's going crazy. How did Dolan get on the wrong side of Oak? He started singing. I'm going to take Charles Oakley's side every day of the week. Don't mess with Oak. You know what? You're dumb if you mess with Oak. Period. And you're no genius if you get up on stage and start singing like that. Anyway, I digress. I'm just saying, some things don't mix. Some things do not mix. Here's another combination to add to that list. A very recently deceased former U.S. president and the XFL. Yes, that is a sentence that I just uttered that I wish I had not. And it even came out. It felt so wrong coming out of my mouth that I'm not sure I can even repeat that. But then again, it never even needed to be said in the first place, right? Or so I thought. But then the XFL had a press conference yesterday. The XFL was once again a thing. A press conference yesterday that was carried on the internet and pretty much nowhere else. A press conference yesterday to unveil the 8 cities and venues that will play host to a league that nobody has missed since it folded back in 2001 and lost $35 million in only 1 year. However, if Zima can make an embarrassing return to the beer aisle, then I suppose the XFL can make an embarrassing return to the sporting landscape. Free country, right? So yesterday, the league announces its 8 cities: New York, D.C., L.A., St. Louis, Seattle, Dallas, Tampa, and Houston. Part of that announcement included representatives from each city coming to the podium to say how excited they were to have an NFL inferior product come to their hometown. But none of it was newsworthy. I mean, what could you possibly say to be newsworthy about the XFL coming back, right? It's really not newsworthy. Or it wasn't until Janice Burke, the CEO of the Houston Sports Authority, walked on stage to represent H-Town. Now, it's important to note that while she was talking in New Jersey, former President George H.W. Bush was being tearfully eulogized in Washington, D.C., only 200 miles away. Unfortunately, Janice Burke could not help but pay a tone-deaf homage to a local Houston hero. She simply could not help herself.
We couldn't have a better partner in the University of Houston. They have been passionate about this from the onset of the bid, and so it's really exciting to have them here today in the audience to hear this news with us. I know that in Houston, we are mourning the loss of an iconic man today. He was a huge sports fan. We will miss him dearly, but I can't help but think he's looking down from heaven, and he's pleased to hear this news.
Oh, hell no. She went there. She actually went there. Can somebody please roll a working time machine onto stage so Miss Burke can walk into it right now? Please somebody do that. For all of our sakes. She did not just say that George H.W. Bush is smiling down on an XFL internet streamed press conference, did she? And she did not just say that while she was simultaneously, or he was simultaneously, being eulogized by his son. She did not just do that, did she?
I know that in Houston, we are mourning the loss of an iconic man today. He was a huge sports fan. We will miss him dearly, but I can't help but think he's looking down from heaven, and he's pleased to hear this news.
Oh, damn, she did go there. She did say that. Listen, I want to be respectful and careful because there are some things that are very sensitive that are in play. Lots of different things, and especially in this day and age. Death, politics, religion, all these things on the table right now. These are not easy waters to navigate. But even in 2018, I think we can all agree, regardless of your faith, regardless of what you believe, I think we can all agree, whether you believe in heaven or not, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, I think this is even one thing we can all agree on. There is absolutely no chance that the late George H.W. Bush was smiling down from above about the news that the XFL is returning to his hometown in 2020. I think we can all agree on that. Just as I think we can all agree that he was not looking down and smiling at an internet stream press conference, nor listening. I think we'd all like to believe that if heaven truly does exist, that the XFL does not exist alongside of it. Heaven, I would imagine, can be whatever you want it to be. That's up to you. That's part of your personal belief. But I think it's universally accepted that the XFL does not belong in anybody's heaven. If anybody is smiling from heaven concerning the XFL, it's the fact that they don't have to be around to watch the XFL. Quote, I can't help but think he's looking down from heaven and he's pleased to hear this news. Yeah, well, I can't help but think that he's not and that he's not aware of it. And neither can anybody else who heard Janice Burke say that. Friend of this program, Jeff Perlman, tweeted that he was, quote, actually embarrassed for Janice Burke. Deadspin wrote, quote, nobody but those doomed to the fiery pits of hell could ever possibly care about the XFL. End quote. And thousands of people on Twitter were quick to point out that if 41 is watching football in heaven, he's probably watching the first place Texans who play in a real league who are 9-3. Let me tell you about the XFL. The XFL had its best moment already. And that moment came courtesy of Jeff Brohm 17 years ago.
Jeff Brohm, how in the world are you starting this game tonight after taking that hit just 6 days ago?
Well, let me answer that question by asking you two questions. One, is this or is this not the XFL? Yes, it is. Two, do I not currently have a pulse? Yes, I do. Let's play football.
Let me tell you something. It's never going to get better than that. It'll never be any better than that. Listen, there aren't even enough good football players in the world to make the Raiders and Jets competitive. How the hell is somebody supposed to care about the 320 slugs in the XFL? I know I don't. And I'm going to safely assume 41 doesn't either, so probably you should keep his name out your mouth. Do not go attributing his post-mortal life to happiness as it's associated with the XFL, especially when he's being laid to rest in D.C. at the exact same time. As Dennis Eckersley would say, have an idea, Janice. My sincerest rest in peace to Mr. Bush, and may part of his peace include never being mentioned in the same sentence with the XFL ever again. She went there. She went there.
But I can't help but think he's looking down from heaven and he's pleased to hear this news.
Janice, I don't know for certain, but I can't help but think that he's not. Just saying. I can't help but think that he's not. 1-800-636-8686. At belligerent, Nuck is in. He generally elevates the conversation. He makes the show better. That's Matt in Vancouver. Quote, literally, tens of thousands of people are anticipating the return of the hack-off. And not one is anticipating the return of the idiotic XFL. That's Squirrel 2. He tweets, James Dolan sounds awesome. Yours, Nickelback. Wash away my pain with the rain and shambala. Wash away my sorrow. Wash away my... The world's worst mashup. I can't even tell which one's which. Which one of those is Nickelback? Warren Fawcett tweets, Van Songbird, Dolan and Parody Larry should do a duet. Wore the Greg Allman and Cher album. Yeah, but at least they were hooking up, right? Was there a reason for them to do a duet? I can see why they got together. Because they got together. Alvin, that was a hideous mashup right there. You've produced a lot of quality over the years. That was not it. We are joined right now, as promised, by a guard with the Phoenix Suns, 19 years in the NBA, a three-time Sixth Man of the Year Award winner, 2018 NBA Teammate of the Year Award winner. 6 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds versus Sacramento on Tuesday. One of only 5 players in NBA history with 50-point games for 3 different teams. Phoenix is at Portland tonight. He is a friend of the program. Jamal Crawford is my guest. Jamal, it is so good to have you back. How are you, Jamal?
I'm good. That was a heck of an introduction. Thank you.
My man, you got a great resume. You have a super resume. Always happy to talk about it. Hey, let's go back to the offseason. A number of teams were interested in you, but as you told the Undefeated, you could sign a deal, but you were not going to sign one just to sign one. So what were you looking for in a team and in a situation?
For me, I thought fit was important. Last year, I thought it would be a really good fit, but it didn't turn out that way. So for me, I thought fit kind of trumped everything else. And I thought coming to Phoenix, I knew, you know, everybody was like, hey, they're young. They're really young. And, you know, they have work to do. But sometimes, like I said before, it's important to help get something from point A to point C rather than B, you know, just from the end of the game. So for me, I thought it was important to kind of lead the way for the younger group and try to help out where I could.
You know, you just kind of mentioned that, but what do you mean by that exactly? I would imagine that kind of relates to working with the younger guys, but in going from point A to point C, how do you go about doing that, and why is that so important?
Because these are guys that are just kind of starting out their career. Seeing a guy like Ayton, you know, seeing a guy like Mikal Bridges, seeing Ellie, our young point guard, seeing Melton, these young guys, Booker obviously taking that next step. He's already a guy that's established in the league, but taking that next step to true stardom, you know, just kind of getting in their mind frame and giving them knowledge and wisdom and work ethic and just different pointers in the game. And then also doing it by example, you know, seeing guys like Trevor Ariza, who was actually my rookie in New York, Ryan Anderson, and Tyson was here when I signed as well, seeing that nice group of veterans. And I really believed in Igor. I believe he's going to be an outstanding coach. Obviously, he's a first-year coach, and there's things you have to go through. But I believe in the long run, he'll be outstanding.
Jamal Crawford joining us. You know, you've got so much to impart upon the younger guys, but it's not just that you're there leading. I mean, you're there grinding every single day like you always have. You're doing the work. You're putting up shots. What is it that keeps you motivated and keeps you putting in all that time these days?
Just love of the game. That's really it. Like, I love the game more than anything else. So for me, as long as I'm on a basketball court somewhere, I'm okay. You know, and to be able to still work at your craft, still get better, not know everything, still want to learn, still want to compete, still want to actually go out there and produce and be in those moments where you can hit winning shots or be in those moments where it's tight games and it can go either way. You know, just that drive, and it really gets the blood boiling. So just pure love of the game.
Phoenix Sun, Jamal Crawford joining us. Now, last month you scored your 19,000th career point. It's a really big number. That's put you ahead of guys like Scottie Pippen. You're closing in now on guys like Bernard King and David Robinson. What does that number represent to you?
It's an unbelievable number. It really is. And for me, like you said, I don't look so much at the number, but I look at the names. You know, some of my favorite players growing up, whether it be Penny Hardaway or Grant Hill or Magic Johnson, you know, Pistol Pete, seeing all these guys that I'm passing are like guys that influenced and had so much influence on my game. So to see the names is just, it's humbling. It really is. And that means more to me than the number, because those are guys who had an effect on my game. Isaiah Thomas, you know, I wear number 11 because of him. So to be able to pass some names like that, it says everything.
Jamal, I could ask you about any one of the guys you just mentioned, but the name that kind of jumps out to me is Pistol Pete. I've never seen a guy play the game like him. I mean, there were some other guys that had a lot of flair, a lot of charisma, a lot of style, a lot of swagger, but I'm not sure I've ever seen a guy like that. What did you think about his game?
It was unique. Think about it right now, right? If you went back and watched it from 20, 30, 40 years ago, it was still transferred to today. You know, it wasn't like it was outdated. It was so far ahead of its time that it was timeless. He had a timeless game. He had a game that you could appreciate even today, all these years later. Seeing what he did in college, seeing what he did in the NBA, hearing stories about him riding down the car with his father, dribbling the ball while the car was moving. So many stories about creativity. And I think sometimes that's the lost art, just the pure love for the game and getting better and new ways to bring different things to the game. I thought he was a trendsetter in that respect.
Jamal Crawford joining us. I agree. Not only is his game timeless, I mean, even today his game would be like, holy bleep. Did you see what that guy did? Now, you've had some amazing games in your career, like the time you scored 118 in a game, but you told Dan Wojcicki of the LA Times your favorite game ever was the time you scored 52 against Dwayne Wade in Madison Square Garden. What do you remember about that game?
Well, to be honest with you, I remember I missed my first four shots.
Wow.
You know, I'm such a rhythm guy. I missed my first four shots. And then I scored 42 straight points without a miss. So that was just unbelievable. And it was just like you're on stage. I remember Heath Ledger was at that game, Michael Rappaport. There were so many different people, but you just get lost in time. Like everything's in slow motion. They had just won the championship the year before, you know, and Dwayne Wade's one of the best players I ever played against. So to be able to be on that stage and kind of go back and forth with him a little bit was unbelievable. And it was incredible because I came out with 7 minutes to go. So that was the hottest night of my life. It easily, and I very humbly say, it could have been a 60-65 point game if I'd have stayed in the rest of the way.
Oh, for sure it could have, for sure. And the amazing thing about you missing four in a row to start, you scored 42 straight without a miss at one point. What's it like to be in a zone like that when everything slows down? And is there a way to get into that zone again? Do you try to get into the zone, or is it just something that happens?
It's something that happens, but you definitely have a feel for it. You don't look at the floor to see if it's a three or a two. You're just looking for space. And once you feel that space, you feel like, hey, I can shoot it and it'll go in. Sometimes you feel like you can kick it up there and it might go in. And you just feel lost. And it's amazing because it's never just about you. You know, your teammates are giving you the ball. They're setting great screens. The crowd's getting into it. And you feel all those different things, you know. So it's just an unbelievable feeling. And I scored 50 after that, but never like that, hitting 16 straight shots. And 8 of the 16 were threes. So that was pretty cool.
Jamal Crawford joining us. I think you do a great job on Twitter. And recently you were asked, what's your favorite single Jordan that you own? And your response was, quote, the ones he gave me. So what's the story behind that pair or the pairs?
Well, I actually got a great relationship with him. Being in Chicago, I used to work out with him. Funny story, for two straight years, I played basketball with him in the summer, and we never lost a game. It was when he was coming back to the Wizards. And he really took a liking to me. I started going to his house to work out with him. He picked me to be in a commercial, Gatorade commercial with him, the old Jordan versus the young Jordan. But he gave me his first pair of Jordans he ever wore against the Bulls as an opponent, and he gave me the last pair, and I have both pairs. So those are my favorite ones.
That's awesome. Jamal, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, and I understand that guys in different generations, it's hard to compare guys. But, I mean, you mentioned it. You had a relationship with him. You played with him, against him. You know what Mike's about. I mean, instead of me asking you who's the GOAT, I'll put it to you another way. I mean, could you argue that somebody's more so than Michael Jordan?
Not for me. It's just he was just excellent. He was so good. If you go watch Come Fly With Me, right, his documentary that came out, it came out the summer of 1990. On there, they were already saying he had dominated basketball and he was the best. He hadn't even won a championship then. Then he goes and wins three in a row. He gets bored with that, goes and plays baseball, comes back after he gets himself together and wins three more in a row, 6 and 8 years. Like, he's just out of this world. And for me, the bigger the moment, the better he was. And he never saw a game seven in the finals. He never lost in the finals. So we may not have seen the most clutch moment that he had in his body, in his mind, in his heart. You know, so for me, it's not even close. He's the best ever.
Phoenix Sun, Jamal Crawford joining us. I appreciate that a lot. You were also asked about the toughest defender you ever faced, and you said Tony Allen. So what was it about Tony Allen and the pride that this guy took in his defense? What made him so tough?
Oh, it was unbelievable. You know, just him coming to the arena, you knew it was going to be a dogfight. He had me thinking on offense, and that's the best thing you could do as a defender is think, have that offensive player thinking what to do, what not to do. And with him, he took so much pride in it. Him getting a stop was like scoring a bucket. And he took full pride in that. He owned that. He didn't ask for help. He wanted that mano-a-mano challenge, and he was just the best. And then there were other good guys, Doug Christie, Bruce Bowen. But Tony Allen, for me personally, was probably the toughest.
We're talking to Jamal Crawford. I would imagine you have a great deal of pride in this. Your peers in the league voted for you to receive the NBA Teammate of the Year Award. So what does that award mean to you?
That meant everything, even more than the Sixth Man of the Year Awards, to be honest with you. Because when you're getting those type of awards, you know, through the Sixth Man, you're doing a certain number of scoring, a certain number of winning. The Teammate of the Year is not an award you can measure. It's not something you're trying to win. You're not trying to go out there and say, I'm going to be the best teammate to win this award. You're trying to put other people before you put yourself. And that's, to me, spoke more to character and really having somebody else's best nature in front of your own and no agenda. So that was really, really proud of that one.
We're talking to Jamal Crawford. A couple of days back, too, there was this great, great photo of you and Bill Russell spending some time together, knowing what he's meant to the game and to society. What's it like when you get even a second with somebody like Bill Russell? How much do you value that?
Oh, you can't even measure it. You always feel in awe, if that makes sense. And we really developed our relationship this summer. I remember he sent me a text saying he's coming to my pro-am game, and my wife thought I was being catfished. And then when he came, it was funny. It was a pro-am game. My pro-am goes on every weekend. The game almost stopped. It was like frozen in time. It didn't stop, but it actually stopped. And even the players on the court gave him a standing ovation. Everybody in the crowd gave him a standing ovation. He's just – he's royalty, not just basketball royalty, but American royalty. And he's been unbelievable for me and for even people that don't know him. It's just an inspiration.
I agree with you. Before you go, so you've got all these young guys right now that are taking their cue from you and they're learning from you and you're teaching them how to win, how to prepare, how to bounce back every single night. When you were coming up, who were some of the guys that kind of took you under your wing, guys that you respected and admired and that you learned a lot from?
Oh, yeah, Charles Oakley, Rick Brunson, Kendall Gill, Fred Hoiberg, Scottie Pippen. I had some really good vets after my first couple of years. The first couple of years, we were really, really young. And then from there, the next couple years in Chicago, we had some really, really good vets and guys who really wanted to see the next generation do things the right way. And, you know, it's all these years later, I'm helping pass that on. So those guys are some really good teachers.
Hey, Jamal, last thought. I don't want to paraphrase this because I can't do it justice, but that play, that piece that dropped in the Players Tribune from Allen Iverson this morning, and he talks about Mike, and he tells the most amazing story that before Michael Jordan's last All-Star game, AI's looking for Mike. He wants to have a moment with Mike. He's looking all over for him. He can't find him. And he finally goes into the coach's office, and Mike is already in his jersey. He's at the coach's desk, feet up on the desk, and he's smoking a cigar before the All-Star game. And AI's like, you got to be kidding me. He's like, this is the coolest dude ever. Quote, the black Jesus. There will never be anybody that cool, and he'll never even have to work to be that cool. Did you ever see Mike do anything like that, or anybody do anything like that for that matter?
Oh, no. I've seen, like I said, being around him for two straight summers, I've seen it all. I've seen where he would actually wear an outfit, right? So he'd wear some type of yellow Jordan outfit, and outside he'd have a yellow Ferrari to match, you know, like with his Jordans that probably still aren't coming out. Like, he was the coolest thing ever. And it was amazing because I saw bits and pieces of AI's article. And he's absolutely right. There's a glow around Michael Jordan that you can't even explain. I've never seen it with anybody else. There's a glow around him that's just like, he definitely freezes time. It could be, he's the star that gets the stars starstruck, if that makes sense. And that's why he's the GOAT.
That does make sense. And you're right. That's the phrase that he used. There's a glow around Michael Jordan. I love that story, Jamal. It's kind of like he didn't accessorize the outfit with the car. I think he accessorized the car with the outfit. Like, if I'm going with my yellow, right?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
Friend of the program, and you've got one of the best to ever do it. 19 years in the NBA, Jamal Crawford. Jamal, you know I appreciate you so much. It is always good to have you on the show, and so great to get caught up, Jamal. Thank you so much, man.
Always, Jim. Anytime. I appreciate you.
Good night now!